This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. My name is Patsy Gill. I'm thrilled that I have in the studio with me Jackie Minniti, who will later on talk about her book, Jacqueline, based on a true story told by her father about World War II. But first, we're going to California, where I have Andrea Brown on the phone. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, great to talk to you this morning.
Oh, nice to hear your voice. I've read so much about you, and I've heard so much about you from various writers that it's really thrilling for me to be able to talk to you.
Great.
Well, you know, I think one of the testaments to the importance, to your importance in the as an agent, the premier, really, children's author's agent, is that you were able to pick up and move from New York to California. You know, most agents would be too insecure, but you didn't have to worry.
Yeah, especially because I did it 25 years ago before agents were able to pick up and go anywhere.
Exactly.
When I moved out here, there were only three agents in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they all said, "Of course, you could move out here. We have fax, and we have express mail, and there's it was way before even email." So it was kind of funny that in those days, it was kind of a tricky thing, and I wasn't sure it would work, but it turned out to be the best thing I ever did, because I already knew all the New York publishing scene, had no idea, really, that there was a whole West Coast publishing scene, almost as big in some respects, with lots of publishers, a huge bookseller community, tons of talented writers and illustrators. So it opened up a whole other part of the business for me, and writers' conferences that are all up and down the West Coast, and it just turned out to be the best thing I ever did, and that's how I ended up growing my agency. So we went from a one-person shop to nine of us.
And definitely the most well-known, I think, of agents that specializes in children's books.
Yeah, we've been rated number one for the last 5 or 6 years, and we've sold books to every publisher. We sell everything from picture books through young adult novels. And so we also represent illustrators. I was the first agent in New York or anywhere to represent both children's book authors and illustrators. Before that, there were only artist reps or author reps.
Well, it's a perfect combination, because I'm sure many times you've come across an author who has a great story to tell, and then to match them up with an illustrator is a fantastic...
Yeah. We don't always do that. I mean, usually the publisher wants to hook up the author with an illustrator, and sometimes they don't even let the two people talk to each other. They want to keep the artist totally fresh, in their own heads, and not even let the authors talk to the illustrators. So that happens a lot.
So, there have been a lot of descriptions of you, but one of the words that I noticed comes up often is indomitable, which my kids loved that word when they were little. They used to use that. My children were very precocious youngsters,
and I guess
they had read all the Hardy Boys by the time they were 5 years old.
Uh-huh.
So it was difficult, as you can imagine, for me to send them to school. So
yeah.
I landed up homeschooling them. And as a result, I got to see personally the development of reading in children, and how important it is, and how fantastic to that a great children's book can mean so much to them.
Oh, absolutely. And the fact is, if we don't hook a child by age 11 as a reader, we lose them forever, and then they'll never read as an adult. So it's so crucial to get them started really as young as possible. But if you have a kid that's not a reader yet, and they're getting, close to the age of 10, you better start, whether it's comic books, graphic novels, I don't really care, as long as a kid reads something.
Well,
because
if they start to read something,
they will read.
I was raised in a small town in northern Michigan, and our first literature were comic books, and we just went through them like crazy. But we learned to read at a very young age. And so when it came to getting, you know, real books, we were so excited. And it's wonderful that, you know, when did you know that you were going to specialize in children's books? You had been an editor.
It's funny because when I left Syracuse University, I went to the Newhouse School of Communications and Journalism, came out with a degree in magazine journalism, and went to New York. And I was actually offered a job at Vogue magazine. And I could have been the original Devil Wears Prada girl, because I could have, you know, gotten coffee for the editors at Vogue. But they wanted my nails perfectly done every week for $95 a week. So there was also a job at Dell Publishing Company, and they were paying $125 a week, and they didn't care what my nails looked like. So I took that job thinking I could move into the magazine end of Dell Publishing Company. Within 2 weeks, I loved the children's book business, because basically I got paid to read all the books that were published and tell my boss, the publisher, what we should publish in paperback. And I got to go to movies and tell them what might be a good movie tie-in. So my first job out of college was to read and go to movies. Not too bad.
No, not bad at all.
Yeah. And then I had mentors, which is hard to find these days. I had editors who took the time to train me and teach me how to write cover copy and edit. And I got to work with wonderful authors and went to Random House, worked with Dr. Seuss and the Berenstain Bears. I worked with Judy Blume. I worked with Paula Danziger. I mean, just incredible authors. And then I was an editor at Knopf, a division of Random House, and realized, you know, agents have a nice life. There weren't enough of them for children's books. And contracts started to change from a few pages to 6 or 8 or then 10 pages. And I kind of realized I was on the wrong side of the fence, that while I loved books, I really loved the writers and illustrators more. So that's when I became an agent. We're celebrating this month 34 years.
Wow, that's fantastic. You know, it's so wonderful when you really find your niche, find what really thrills you, and to be able to read books. It always seemed to me that the ideal job in life was to be an agent.
It was.
So, you know, when you take on an author, how closely do you work with them? I know that you are don't take on many new authors nowadays, but how closely do you work with your authors?
We always take on an author and plan to work with them. Very few manuscripts come in perfect, ready to send out and pitch to editors. So pretty much we're a very editorial-based agency. All 9 of my agents, all of us, are editorial-driven. Not every agency is like that. There are some agents who come to the business from bookselling or maybe from marketing, and they're not as editorial. So I think for writers who want that, our agency is good. For some, if they feel like they have enough editorial help, they may not need that, and they should find agents that are just more marketing-based, perhaps. But we do a lot of work, and I personally am not taking on many new clients. I'm busy running the agency, have a lot of my clients for 25 years, whatever. But all my other 8 agents are incredible, talented, brilliant women, and they're always taking clients. So people should just check our website, AndreaBrownLit.com. Check out the bios, check out, you know, the agents that might be a good fit for them, and certainly query us, email only.
Well, you know, I was recently invited to talk to a group of mostly young women who, young mothers, actually, who were set up a reader's writing club. They want to both read and they want to learn how to write. And so they were asking me, What should they read in order to become better writers? What are your suggestions?
Well, you have to read everything that's in your genre. I'm always amazed at people who say, oh, I'm writing a picture book. And then I ask them, oh, what picture books have you been reading lately that you love so much? And they're like, oh, I don't really read too many of them. And that's just like the kiss of death. I don't want to look at those manuscripts because I don't think that writer is serious. First of all, professional, second of all, and well-read enough to know what's out there, what the market wants, you know, how to write the perfect picture book. It's the toughest thing to write, because in 600, kind of like 500 to 800 words is pretty typical. It has to be the perfect book, a beginning, a middle, an end. It has to tell a story. It has to intrigue kids, plus the gatekeepers who buy the books for the little kids. So, you know, you've got to read picture books if you're writing them, and the same thing for middle grade or women's romance. Whatever it is you're writing, you better read all kinds of authors, all kinds of genres that are in that particular category.
Now, one of the things I've been getting a lot of children's books sent to me since I started my radio program, and you know, many of them are really great. But I've also noticed sort of trends. There's been, I don't know how can I express it. Some are depressing.
Oh yeah, like dystopian. Yeah, like dystopian's been so big. When you look at some of the books that have been out there the last few years, and so big, and the movies that are made out of them. Hunger Games comes to mind. You know, I mean. Yeah, it's pretty depressing stuff, but teenagers love that. Kids like that because it is so different, hopefully at least, from their lives every day. But that's one of the trends that's sort of waning a little bit. You know, there's so much good dystopian. There's so much good paranormal. I don't think we need to see another, you know, vampire book or another zombie book probably for a really long time. But it's cyclical, you know, so there's a lot out there now. It might be tough to sell your dystopian now. It doesn't mean 2-3 years from now it won't be, you know, hard to sell. So just put it in a drawer, you know, never throw anything out, never shred anything. Just wait and see when the cycle switches around again.
Well, I want to get back to children's books for a minute because, you know, the illustrated books, every once in a while at one of these writers' meetings, someone will say to me, oh, well, I can put out a 32-page kids' book. That's easy.
Yeah,
and
that's
I say,
the problem. People
that's
think
that's
easy.
Not, it's not easy. I think it's more difficult. Yeah. It's easier to sit down and write 600-page, you know, book than that 32-page book because it has to be honed so perfectly.
Yeah. Every word has to count. Absolutely. And that's what people, you know, it really bothered me when people say, oh, I'm writing a picture book someday, you know, or my daughter's writing a picture book. And the fact is, yeah, it took Dr. Seuss a year to write one book. It takes most of our picture book writers a long time to get it just perfect. And then it still has to get edited, and the editor works on it, we work on it. So, yeah, you have to have a picture book voice. That's the other thing, too. People think anybody can write a picture book. No, if you can't remember what it's like to be 4 and 5 and have that sense of humor, you know, and think boogers are funny, then don't write picture books.
Were you thrilled when you heard about the Dr. Seuss book that was...
Yes.
Wasn't that thrilling?
Excited. Yes, really. Everything he does is masterful. And we weren't allowed to really edit him either. It was like you could change a comma, but that was about it.
I thought that's always so magical. It's like when the Louisa May Alcott book was discovered, discoveries of long lost manuscripts. We're still waiting for that suitcase of Hemingway's books that were.
That happened.
You know, I dream about it sometimes. I think, oh, if I just go to Paris and I rummage through someplace, I'm going to find that suitcase.
You know, all right, you find it.
And wouldn't that be wonderful? Now, as a agent, one of the things that I always tell people is that when they are looking for an agent, that they have to look for somebody who, as you said, suits them and look at the web page and find out exactly what an agent wants in a query letter. And the most important thing I tell people, new writers, is that they should never pay an agent. I met a young woman recently who paid quite a bit of money to an agent.
And that's a scam. Listen, you know, all the writers listening out there, please do not pay anyone to read your manuscript with the possibility of them taking you on and selling your manuscript. I don't believe you should really pay to even have your works published by a small press. You know, I'm an agent. I make money only if you make money. So I want to see writers get paid. But the fact is, we get thousands of submissions every year. If we charged a reading fee, would I ever have to sell one single book? No. I could just make a nice living and pay my California mortgage just by charging people to read their manuscripts. So it's such a scam. You know, anybody who's listening, please do not do that.
Absolutely, and that's what I always warn writers. Now, I have to take a quick break, but I want you to stay on because I want to talk about the Big Sur Workshop, which is an amazing event.
Yeah.
We'll just take a quick break. Hold on.
Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi. I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Are you looking for the perfect gift? Going to a wedding? A special birthday? The Silver Queen is the place to go. Don't settle for the ordinary. At the Silver Queen, you will find a unique gift. Things that you won't find at the mall. From beautiful photo frames to silver and china. Guys, looking for that perfect ring? You'll find it at the Silver Queen. And don't forget their bridal registry. Located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. Visit their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. And when you go to the store, tell them that Patsy with a Z sent you.
Discover the magic of Bock Tower Gardens with family fun for everyone. The National Historic Landmark in Lake Wales is one of America's finest gardens, centrally located in rolling hills of citrus. Experience nature and romance as you enjoy the Singing Tower carillon bells ringing every half hour. Travel back in time as you tour the 1930s Mediterranean-style Pinewood Estate. Bring your family to create memories to last a lifetime. Open every day with free parking. Plan your visit at bocktowergardens.org.
If you're in the market for your next car, then the place to shop is AutoShopper.com. You'll have access to hundreds of dealers right here in the area. And you can search over millions of cars nationwide on AutoShopper.com. AutoShopper.com is in hundreds of locations in the Tampa Bay area. Find your next car by taking advantage of all the power and reputation of AutoShopper.com. From your desktop, you can read car reviews, automotive news, calculate payments, use our tools to research, and get a Carfax vehicle history report at AutoShopper.com. This is the publication to pick up and read when you're looking to purchase your next car. Log on to AutoShopper.com and search for your special vehicle. And if you want to sell your vehicle, then advertise it in AutoShopper.com magazine. The readers can view a picture of your car and call you directly. It's all happening at AutoShopper.com, your auto buying and selling source. Pick up the magazine today or log on to AutoShopper.com, the premier source for car buying or selling. AutoShopper.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with Andrea Brown, a famous literary agent for children's books. Hi, Andrea.
I'm back.
Okay, great. You know, I know that the industry has changed so much in the past, you're celebrating your 34th year in the business. 34 years ago, there weren't a lot of workshops for writers. But today, it's very important element of learning and about writing and about getting published.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are certainly conferences everywhere in the world, really. Tons of them on the West Coast especially. But I got tired of doing conferences and speaking at them. And so about 16 years ago, I started the Big Sur Writing Workshops. Workshops are a little different. And what we created really is unique. And we've had so many successes from it. We hold it at the Big Sur Lodge in Big Sur, California, which is along the beautiful scenic Highway 1. And you're in the redwoods, and we're in cabins, and there's no TV, there's no radio, sorry about that, but, you know, there's nothing to distract the writers from writing. And magic just happens there every year. We do them in the first week in December, beginning of March, and we have had six-figure deals come from them. We get writers to really hone their skills, really polish their work, know what they have to do, focus on their writing for a whole few days, a weekend. We fly in New York editors. We have West Coast editors. We have authors. We have a lot of the agents from my agency, and we've had other agents come. So it's really been just fabulous, and I love doing them. And it's just so satisfying to see writers come on Friday, and their work may not be so great. And some of the faculty will say, why is this person here? But by Sunday, magic happens, and they really seem to get it. And their works have changed, and they know what they're doing. Where some people come thinking they're writing picture books, they leave writing a middle grade novel. So it's been a fabulous experience.
And the nice thing about your workshop, it's very intimate. There's close relationship between the writers and the agents and editors.
Yeah. And we're sponsored by the Henry Miller Library, which is down in Big Sur. And people always say Henry Miller and children's books, but, you know, it's literature. And so the fact is that you're in a very literary area where Miller was and Steinbeck and so many authors, Jane Smiley's down the street. And so this area just has always had something about the beauty of being by the ocean and the mountains and the redwoods that just get those creative juices going.
For all of my listeners, I want to tell them that the workshops are priced so, I mean,
yeah, reasonable. We keep the price down.
It's very reasonable.
Yeah. And we have people come from all over the world, actually.
Well, they should, because it's the price is so reasonable, and of course the area and where you've set it up is so beautiful, and it's inspiring just to be there. And
absolutely.
You
come
made
on
it.
Out, Patsy.
Huh?
Come on out, Patsy.
Well, I plan to. I plan to. I have it. I've had a 32-page book in my head for years, and I've always found it very difficult to hone down. So I'm going to try to come out to the March one, because I would love to work with you. I know that to work with your group and to work with your people is an amazing experience. Now tell me, when you were a child, what was your favorite children's book? What book inspired you? What
books? My gosh. What book inspired?
Were you a big reader as a child, I'm sure?
Yeah, I did. I did always read. I liked mysteries. You know, again, I'm so old that we didn't have the wealth of children's literature that kids today are so blessed to have. You know, our age, I was reading Nancy Drew's when I was pretty young. And like you said, even the Hardy Boys, I loved mysteries. So that's what I would read. And then I started loving historical novels. So books like Celia Garth and anything about the Civil War. I love, Gone with the Wind. I read I think I was 11 or something. So, I sort of went to adult books pretty early, because we didn't have young adult genre. We didn't have really the middle grade genre. You know, there were a few Beverly Cleary books and things like that. But, I just don't remember. I know my mother did read picture books to me, but I don't really remember too many of them. So I'm just so happy that, things have changed so much. And part of that is thanking J.K. Rowling, coming along with the Harry Potter series that got kids to read who never read before and opened up the door. And adults realized, wow, there's some value to children's books. And advances went up. And finally, children's book authors got the respect they deserved for years and didn't really get before. So now kids today have no excuse not to read so many different things, because there are so many great books out there.
When my boys were young and they were standing in line, well, my husband would take the children to Barnes & Noble at, 10 o'clock at night to stand, 9 o'clock at night to stand in line for hours until midnight to get one of the Harry Potter books. And that was
that
so thrilling.
And right. That only happened for Stephen King and never for children's book authors before that.
Exactly. And I think I just hope that there's more children's books that come out to inspire children to read. And now as I said, my boys were always readers, but they're even bigger readers today. Now, what are the general trends in children's literature right now?
Well, I'm not sure that there is any one big trend, and I don't like talking about trends too much, because if I tell, people out there now that this is a trend, by the time they write it and polish it and get it to me and we might look at it and take it on, the trend would be gone already. So I don't think writers necessarily should write to trends. I think you have to write what you're most passionate about, you know, what your inner child tells you to write. Again, if you don't remember what it's like to be 15 or 16, that first kiss, that teen angst, the first prom, you know, things like that, don't write for that teen market. If you don't remember what it's like to be 10, 11, don't write middle grade. You know, you have to write about universals, what's in a kid's life. People shouldn't just create all kinds of magical, weird worlds. And I don't mean fantasy. I love fantasy. But, you know, it has to have a basis in reality. It has to be credible. But you have to write what you want to write. So even if it's not with a trend, that's fine. Maybe create a new trend.
When people come to your workshop, do they always have the full book, a book completed, or do they?
Oh, no. Some people come with just a few chapters. Some come with two chapters and a synopsis. We've had even a couple of people who just come with ideas and want to just think, you know, see if it's worthwhile doing and talk about, you know, the possibilities and get started writing. So many people have 2-3 jobs or 3 kids at home and a full-time job and have to struggle to find writing time. If you're a writer, you have to write. And so, you know, when you come to things like workshops, yeah, you spend the whole time just focusing on that, forgetting the chores at home, the kids at home, whatever. And I think that's part of the value for people to find good critique groups that can support you and help you and guide you. Writers can't work alone. You know, it's a team effort. As soon as you hook up with an agent, we become a team, and then we sell it to the publisher, and then you have a team at the publishing company. So it's really just that you're alone for the beginning, and then you have to promote. You know, you have to get the book out there, the discoverability factor. So there's so many stages to being a writer. It just starts with the beginning, with the first chapter or the first pages, but then there's so much more involved, so you can't work in a vacuum at all. And people have to realize, yeah, you know, it's going to take kind of a village, you know, to get your books out there.
Well, that's a wonderful thing about working with an agent, and particularly working with your agency, because you are well known for this dedication to your authors. What are the best venues that you use for your young adult authors? How do you like to promote them?
You know, teenagers are into social media, from Instagram, Facebook, everything. So, unfortunately, for a lot of older writers, it's hard to, get really good at social media, but you have to. You know, as soon as you're finished with your manuscript, you get a website up and going. You get on Facebook and Twitter and all those things. So, you know, you just have to do a lot to appeal to the teen market. You have to know what they're interested in, their chat rooms and the blogs that are there. And it's tricky, but yet it's the easiest way to promote your books for the young adult market. It's a little harder for middle grade and picture books because, you know, those kids aren't really reading magazines so much or, you know, shopping themselves or going into bookstores themselves. Although pretty much now kids after about age 9 or 10 do want to go to the bookstores and buy and pick out their own books or go on Amazon and order their own books. So I think that, you know, it's harder for authors of middle grade and younger to really get out there and market and promote. But we work with publicists. We work with marketing people. We have a lot of guidelines we help our authors with for marketing because, you know, it's sad when you work hard, you work years maybe to get your manuscript finished, and then you get it to a publisher or you even self-publish. And then no one finds it. Nobody buys it. You want people to read your work, I hope. You know, I mean, there are some people that just write books for their grandchildren. That's fine. But I think most writers do really care about people reading their work and saying, I loved your book, even more than the money. You know, don't go into this business for the money. Don't give up your day job, even if you get a nice book contract. So money, you never know. I mean, some of our authors do really well. Some make, you know, just one advance, maybe $10,000 a year writing. So it really varies from very little money to millions. But you can't count on it. You know, and I hate writers to think, oh, this is an easy or quick way to make money. Not at all.
Now, are there one thing with I have found with romance writers, for example. They're very well organized in promoting themselves. We recently had here in Tampa the Beach Babes Book Blast, and we had 64 romance authors. It was a great success, and all of the fans came out to meet and greet the authors, and of course it was a romance fiction event, and many of the authors brought their cover art, the hunky guys, out with them, which was a great promotion. But
you have to do things like that. Well, in children's books, there is a big organization called the Society of Children's Book Authors and Illustrators, SCBWI, and I believe it's scbwi.org. And people can go, and they have programs all over the country. It's a national organization. It's the biggest writers' organization. There's like 12 or 13,000 members. And they have conferences every year in L.A. and New York, and then smaller ones, critique groups, a newsletter, marketing information. So people should check out the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators.
Okay, I will give that advice to all of the writers who are asking me how they should promote their books. So let's talk one more time about Big Sur. Where do they go? Where do people go to register for the workshop? You have one coming up in December. I think it's December 4th, is it?
Yeah, December 4th weekend. And probably the March one will be more of a master class. We're not quite sure about that yet, but we're signing up people, taking registrations for the December one. People can just go to either the henrymillerlibrary.org, or they can go to my website, andreabrownlit.com, and look under workshops. We have a link to the workshops, and just Google the Big Sur Children's Writing Workshops. So there's many ways to find us.
Okay, well, I will be advising everyone to come out and join the workshop and meet you and work with you. And it's been a thrill for me to talk to you. I'm so honored that you came on, because I consider you the preeminent children's agent.
Well, thank you.
And
it's been fun.
Thank you so much. And hope to talk to you at one of the workshops.
Great. Good. I hope to see you. Take care, Patsy.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Bye. Now. Bye.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you looking for the perfect gift? Going to a wedding? A special birthday? The Silver Queen is the place to go. Don't settle for the ordinary. At the Silver Queen, you will find a unique gift. Things that you won't find at the mall. From beautiful photo frames to silver and china. Guys, looking for that perfect ring? You'll find it at the Silver Queen. And don't forget their bridal registry. Located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. Visit their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. And when you go to the store, tell them that Patsy with a Z sent you.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
The City of Dunedin introduces baseball done our way. Start with a morning on our pristine beaches. Next, off to downtown for some unique shopping. Then a bit of lunch at one of our many award-winning restaurants. And now, time for an afternoon game at Florida Auto Exchange Stadium. Finish the day off with a sunset cruise on the Gulf. A day in Dunedin. A day done our way. For more information, go to dunedingov.com.
Some people don't believe in mermaids. Hope that's not you, because they exist at Wickiwatchee Springs State Park off US 19 and State Road 50, just north of Spring Hill. Since 1947, the magic of the mermaids have been entertaining visitors at the 538-acre Springs Park. Come and watch in the 400-seat submerged theater, The Little Mermaid Show at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. daily. Wickiwatchee State Park offers mermaid shows, reptile shows, boat tours, and swimming in the pristine spring at Buccaneer. Premier Bay, Wickiwachee State Park, is a perfect backdrop for wedding receptions, birthday parties, picnics, meetings, retreats, family reunions, or just to relax on the white sandy beach. Step back in time when things were much simpler and enjoyable. Spend the day at an original theme park. Call 352-592-5656 or log on to wickiwachee.com for upcoming events, hours, and ticket pricing. Wickiwachee Springs State Park, where mermaids do exist.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. And I'm back with my next guest, Jackie Minniti, who has joined me in the studio. Jackie was born and raised in New Jersey, and she was a classroom teacher for over 25 years, I think.
Yes.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Patsy.
Okay, so you were a teacher, and now you after you retired, you decided to write.
Yes.
Wow, this is exciting. And your book is called, well, this is your second novel,
yes,
right?
It's
called Jacqueline.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a fascinating story, and I will let Jackie explain that why she's named Jackie.
That's basically what the book is about, I guess. My dad was a veteran of World War II. He was stationed in Rennes, France, 2 days after D-Day they arrived, and he was with the 127th General Hospital. And while he was there, this little girl, unbeknownst to him, took a shine to him and started following him around. The barracks where the 127th was stationed were a little ways past where the little girl lived. So she would wait for him to pass by on the way to the hospital in the morning and follow him there. And then when he came out, she'd be waiting outside the hospital and she'd follow him back. And there was the language barrier. They really weren't able to communicate that well. But she, over the 6 months that he was there, she just adored him. And once he's 98 now, so some of his memories were a little fuzzy, but he said he remembers very distinctly one evening being invited up to the apartment where she lived with her mother for coffee. And the coffee that they had then was not actually coffee. It was some kind of bean that they roasted and ground up.
Because, like chicory.
Yeah. And at the time, Rennes had been occupied by the Nazis, and the people were just so impoverished. And he remembers a dark stairway, and as he was ascending the stairs, he was very careful not to step where the boards were loose because he was afraid that his foot would go through the stair. And at the end of his time that they were stationed in Rennes, he was getting ready to go to Nancy. They were being transferred, and she showed up the day that he left, and he said she was shivering in the cold, and it was raining, and under her arm she had a loaf of bread, which for them was just, you know, that was something very valuable.
And, like gold.
Yes, and in the other hand, she had a book, and the book was written in French. It was called The Humble Saint Bernadette. It was about Bernadette of Lourdes. And she gave these to him as a gift. And he said that she looked so cold. He had a long woolen coat on, and he took his coat and he wrapped it around her. And when it was time for him to leave, he told her that that was his gift to her. And that if there was a man there who knew French, so he could kind of interpret. And he told her if he ever had a daughter, he would name her Jacqueline. And this was the only war story he ever shared with us, but it became just part of our family lore. It was told so often. And when I began to write, he started bugging me to write this story. And I explained, Dad, you know, it's wonderful for us because we know you, but there really isn't anything there that, you know, would appeal to a real wide audience of adults. And he just wouldn't give up. And one day, actually it was at my son's wedding reception, he was sitting at a table with one of the guests who I didn't know, was someone from the bride's side, and this gentleman came running up to me, and he grabbed me by the arm, and he said, "Your father's been telling me the most amazing story, and you've got to write a book about it. I hear you're a writer." And I said, I started to tell him, "Well, you know, that's fine, but who's going to read it?" And before I could even say anything, he said, "I have a daughter who's in sixth grade, and she knows nothing about World War II." And he said that he gave her The Diary of Anne Frank, and she wouldn't believe that it was nonfiction. She was convinced it had to be made up. And he said, "This would be a book that she would love, a story she would love." And it just hit me. I had been a middle school reading teacher for years. I taught seventh and eighth grade reading. And for some odd reason, it never clicked in my mind to write this as a book for that audience. And I thought, why didn't I think of this? The little girl was the age of some of my students, and she'd be a perfect protagonist. And then all of a sudden, I started to see all of these characters, and this plot started to form in my head, and I just sat down and started to write. And it was almost like
magic.
It was like seeing this movie in my head, and I would be just pounding away on the computer, and next thing you know, the book was done.
Well, it is a lovely story. You've woven a really intriguing little story out of the story that your father mm-hmm. gave you, and you've taken it and you really ran with it in a lovely way. And I love what you've done, the characters that you've brought into the story. So tell us a little bit about how you set about explaining Jacqueline's past and what happened to her, and about the characters that you've introduced, her friend, a very good friend, David, and who of course was Jewish,
mm-hmm.
And some of your other inventions, but creations, I would say.
Well, I had to really come up with a lot to supplement what my dad had told me. For some reason, the one-eyed cat just popped into my head. I don't know where it came from. I don't have a cat. I have two large
and macaws. And his name is? The one-eyed cat is named?
Clinoche.
Oh, it's cute.
It means Winky.
Winky.
Because he had one eye. But he just popped into my head. And then my dad gave me a folder. And in the folder was the book that Jacqueline had given him. And he had a number of pictures. There were pictures of her with him, pictures of her with other of the men and women in the 127th. There were also pictures the Yvonne Jamais, the collaborator, that she was a young girl at the time and was keeping company with one of the German soldiers. There was a picture in there of a group of them after the after the liberation of Rennes, where the population really turned on these people. And that picture fascinated me. And then he had the picture of the hospital, and I went on Google Earth and I was able to find it. And we had her address, so I was able to go on Google Earth and find the house is still there. And it just became so fascinating to me to see all of these things from his past coming to life. The David and the Bergères, that was something I just added because I felt that one of the purposes that I had in writing the book, I guess my teacher hat was still on, was to teach children about what was actually happening at that point in history and why World War II was such a pivotal event. And I wanted to include something about the Holocaust. That was something I felt was really vital. I mean, it was such an integral part of that whole historical period. And I wanted also to have a boy in the story because I know from my seventh and eighth grade readers, the boys don't like reading stories about boys, and the girls don't like reading stories about,
vice versa, yeah.
Yeah, they don't like reading stories
so
about
they
the
always,
opposite sex.
Yeah, you have to. Oh, it's
age.
Like Harry Potter, you have to have the girl in there, you know.
So I thought, well, if I put a boy in there who's Jewish, and then I had read that there was actually a large Jewish population in Rennes at that time, and that's what kind of set me to reading about Drancy, that there was a lot of people didn't realize that there was actually an internment camp right outside of Paris where they were rounding up a lot of the Jewish people and feeding them into this. They called it a transit camp, but actually they would take them from there to Auschwitz and Buchenwald to the concentration camps. And there, this was a major event at that time in that area. So I thought that was kind of interesting, and I wanted to pursue that. The other thing was the identity hiding, where some of these young Jewish children had to go and live with families as Catholics, as, you know, as Frenchmen, so that the Nazis wouldn't find them. A lot of the families were complicit in this, and a lot of the clergy as well were instrumental in hiding these children. And I started reading about that, and that was another thing that I thought was interesting, so I wanted to put that in the story. But the research was really the part that fascinated me the most, because I'd never really done that before. And we knew the date. We knew that what we knew about Jacqueline was that her father had been in the French resistance. He had been killed on March 8th, 1943. And the thing that we never really got to what it was about my dad that so entranced this child. But the only thing I could think of is, you know, since she had lost her father, maybe there was something about him that reminded her of her dad. And then I started thinking, you know, of all the children now who are growing up without fathers. Some of them have fathers in the military who are deployed, and some of them are from single-parent homes. And this, that quest for that relationship is something that I think a lot of children can relate to. So I really wanted to make that the core of the story.
Well, you did it. It's very inspirational and very, I think, you know, it's a wonderful book, and I know it's marketed for young adults or
middle grade.
But it's a book that every, you know, an adult will enjoy just as much, because it is, you have woven a really beautiful story into it.
Thank you.
I think it's great. And, you know, you have really, as a matter of fact, I thought at first that you must have traveled there.
Because I've never traveled there.
Really, you created the atmosphere. You really make a reader feel that you're right there, moving along, you know, in Rennes, and it's really great.
Oh, thank you so much. That one of the things that I did when I was doing the research was just to read up everything. I read everything I could on that era. That actually, it was a very short amount of time, but whatever I could find about that. I read a lot about Rennes. I looked at pictures. I watched news clips, footage, you know, from the time. And I really tried to immerse myself in that so that I could write it as authentically as possible.
Well, your father must be so proud. He must be like, oh, she finally did it. My goodness, it only took her.
It is. He's 98. He'll be 99, actually, in October. And I got a call from him shortly after, you know, they ordered the book, and the book came, and I wasn't able to, but he's up in New Jersey, I'm down here in Florida, and I wasn't able to be up with him at the time, but I got a call from him afterwards, and he said, well, girl, he said, you know, I'm not one to throw compliments around to my children too much. He said, you really have to earn them. He said, but I have to tell you, you brought back memories to me that were just so vivid, and he said, I'm just so proud of you, and that just made it all worthwhile. To be able to put that book in his hands was just one of the proudest accomplishments that I've ever experienced.
Well, you're so lucky to have him. My father was also at the D-Day invasion, and you know, it's amazing what these our men through.
Yes.
And as you said, there are so many young men who are, you know, deployed now. Mm-hmm. And I think that this book will be great for their children to read.
Well, I hope so. That's my dad's picture on the cover, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Actually,
I realize that. I thought, well, she better put his picture on, not nobody else's. So, you know, it's just wonderful when your parents can live long enough to see such a wonderful thing. And you've done a beautiful job. And I know that you've written another book, and I'm going to talk to you about that book on another program.
Oh, wonderful.
Because it's great that you've, when you retire, you you've gone straight into writing, and you've done a really wonderful job with this book, and I highly recommend it to everybody. Do you have your own website?
Yes, I do.
And what is the website?
It's JackieMinniti.com.
Okay, so you can go to Jackie's website, or, of course, the book is available on Amazon and at other booksellers. Is it in any of the libraries yet?
I don't think yet. I'm going to work on that. I don't believe it's available. It may be, but...
No, it's hard to get them into the library, but you might donate one to your local library and get them started, because I think there's a great future for this book. It's a very compelling read, and one that, as I said, is as good for, you know, for young people and for adults.
Thank you.
I'm very thrilled that you know, you came on today to tell us about Jacqueline, and I highly recommend it. It's really an inspirational book. Please go to Jackie's website, or go to Amazon.com, and also remember that when you're looking for a workshop to go to attend, check out the Big Sur workshop for children's books that is held in December by Andrea Brown, and the price is reasonable. It's so convenient. Once you get there, everything is taken care of. You are in one beautiful beautiful cabin, sort of clubhouse and cabin at Big Sur, the ideal place for writers, and one where you will really enjoy working with Andrea Brown and with all of her other agents and editors that she brings in from New York, because she knows everybody. And so when you're working with her, you know you're working with the very best. Now, I just want to wish everybody a wonderful week, and I hope that you will all think about writing the book that's in your dreams, that's in your heart. As Andrea said, it's not easy, but it's a matter of determination. And I know that that Jackie here, how long did it take for you to write your book?
It was over a year.
Over a year.
You know, with the research, probably a year and a half.
And you rewrote it several times, probably?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I was in the compulsive editing phase for a while.
Okay, well, but that's what it takes, and that's what it takes to get a book done. It takes dedication. It takes hard work,
yes.
Right? Did you have a process? Do you wrote in the morning, wrote in the evening?
I wrote mostly in the evening after everybody was gone to sleep, and I'm a late night person, so I find I do my best work then, and I would sit all by myself and just pound away.
Okay, well, please go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com. I have an archive there where you can hear the interviews that of all of the different authors and agents that I have spoken to, and click on my contact page to let me know if there's a particular author that you would like me to invite. And remember, veterans, that I will be happy to publish your book on Amazon or Kindle for free. So just contact me through my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com. This is Patsy with the Z, wishing you a great week. And I want to thank Big Ed in the control room, who is always so wonderful. And remember, one of the joys in life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. Join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Bye.
WTAN, Clearwater, Tampa Bay. WDCF, Dade City, Tampa Bay. WZHR, Zephyr Hills, Tampa Bay.